Look around whatever room you are sitting in right now. I mean, I guarantee you're no more than a few feet away from a standard electrical outlet.
Oh, absolutely. They're just everywhere.
Right. And if I asked you what comes out of that wall, you'd probably say, without even missing a beat, well, 120 volts if you're in North America.
Or maybe, you know, 230 volts if you're listening over in Europe.
Yeah, exactly. It feels like this solid, undeniable fact. I mean, it's printed right there on all your appliances.
It is, yeah.
But according to this incredibly detailed engineering breakdown we are looking at today, which is called, What Does RMS Actually Mean? Those numbers are, well, they're essentially an illusion.
They really are.
They're mathematically manufactured.
Yeah, those numbers you see printed on the back of your television or your toaster, they are not actually describing what the electricity is doing at any given second.
Right.
They are a mathematical translation. It's basically a way of making sense of something that is inherently wild and chaotic.
And that translation is our mission for this deep dive. We are going to demystify these three little letters that secretly rule your entire home RMS, or root mean square.
It's a huge concept.
It really is. We're going to translate this dense electrical engineering concept into plain English, figure out why our entire power grid would, you know, just collapse without it.
Right, and discover how this hidden math keeps your utility bills accurate and, more importantly, your house from catching on fire.
Exactly. Okay, let's unpack this. Where do we even start with the reality of what's coming out of the wall?
Well, we have to start with the nature of AC, right? Alternating current power.
Because it's not just a flat line of energy.
No, not at all. AC power is not a steady stream. It is a constantly moving, oscillating wave.
Right.
The electrons in the wire are literally being pushed forward, peaking in pressure, dropping down to zero.
And then they reverse, right?
Exactly. They reverse direction, hit a negative peak, and drop back to zero over and over.
Like 60 times a second in the U.S.
Yeah, 60 hertz. So measuring that is an absolute nightmare, because if the voltage is always changing, what single number do you even assign to it?
That makes sense.
The ultimate goal of the source material we are looking at is finding a way to treat this chaotic, wavy AC power as if it were a steady, manageable flow of DC, or direct current power.
Because DC is easy. I mean, if AAA battery is just 1.5 volts DC, it just sits there, constantly pushing 1.5 volts in one direction. Super simple.
That steady push is exactly what makes DC so easy to calculate. But AC is chaotic.
Right.
So engineers needed a single number to represent that chaos. And before we get into the actual RMS solution, we really have to look at the two most intuitive guesses people make when they try to measure AC voltage.
Because both of those guesses completely fail.
They completely fail. So the first intuitive guess is to just use the peak.
Like just grab the absolute highest point of the wave and run with that number.
Yeah, that's everyone's first instinct. Peak voltage, or V peak. In a standard American outlet, that peak is actually about 170 volts.
Wait, really? 107?
Yes. The wave pushes up to 170, then eventually pulls back down to negative 170.
Oh, wow.
Now, measuring that peak is useful for one specific thing, which is knowing the maximum instantaneous stress on the physical insulation of your wires.
Like if the plastic coating can't handle 170 volts, you're going to get a spark.
Exactly. But what's fascinating here is that using this peak to calculate the real sustained energy being transferred is completely misleading.
Because the wave doesn't just sit at 170 volts.
No, it doesn't.
It just touches it for a microsecond and then drops right back down.
Exactly.
So using peak voltage to estimate the actual power delivered, it's kind of like judging a car's overall fuel efficiency based only on the exact second you have the gas pedal absolutely floored on the highway.
That is a brilliant way to picture it.
Right.
You can't calculate a road trip's average gas mileage assuming you were flooring it the entire time, because most of the time, you know, you were coasting or braking. In the AC circuit, the voltage spends most of each cycle well below that 170 volt peak. So if you plug that peak number into a formula to figure out how much power you're using, you will wildly overestimate the energy transfer.
Okay, so if the peak is a lie because it's too high, I mean, the next logical guess is to just find the middle ground. Let's just take the average of the whole wave.
Right, it sounds incredibly logical, but let's test that logic.
Okay.
A standard AC signal is a symmetric sine wave. That means the top half of the wave, the positive push, is identical in size and shape to the bottom half of the wave, the negative pull.
Mm-hmm.
So mathematically, if you average an equal positive and an equal negative across one full cycle, they perfectly cancel each other out.
Oh.
Yeah. The true mathematical average of a symmetric AC wave is exactly zero.
Which is ridiculous in the real world.
Yeah.
I mean, if you plug in a space heater the coils literally glow red hot.
Exactly.
It's obviously drawing real current and generating real heat. If an engineer's math says the average voltage is zero, implying zero power delivery, the math is just broken.
It is a completely absurd conclusion for a heating element.
Yeah.
Now, some analog meters do try to cheat this. They use what's called a rectified average.
How does that work?
They basically build a circuit that takes the negative bottom half of the wave and flips it up to make it positive.
Yeah.
And then they average that new, entirely positive, bumpy wave. That gives you a number that is about 0.637 times the peak voltage.
But the source material makes a huge point about this, that rectified average is still not interchangeable with RMS.
No, it's not. As we'll see, the average, even the flipped rectified average, it discards critical information about the energy.
Gotcha.
It just doesn't correlate to the true physical heat being produced by the appliance. Both peak and average fail completely when you need a single number that ties directly to real power dissipation.
Which brings us to the actual mathematical trick engineers use to find that single useful number.
Yes, the RMS.
Here's where it gets really interesting. You know, I was looking at the acronym RMS, and it's actually just the literal instructions for the math backwards, isn't it?
It is.
You square it, you find the mean, you take the root.
That backwards reading is actually the secret to the whole equation. You start at the end and work forward through the letters.
Okay, so step one is the S square. You take every instantaneous value of that wavy AC voltage and you multiply it by itself. You square it.
Right.
Step two is the M mean. You take the average or the mean of all of those squared numbers over one full cycle.
Exactly.
And then step three is the R root. You take the square root of that mean you just found. Square mean root.
To see why this isn't just, you know, arbitrary mathematical gymnastics, let's look at the household example from our text.
Sure.
We know the American wall outlet is pushing a wave that physically peaks at 170 volts.
Right.
If we write that out as a sine wave function and square it, which is the first step,
yeah.
Something mathematically beautiful happens.
What happens?
Squaring a sine wave produces a new wave that has a known time average value of exactly one half of the peak squared.
Wait, 170 squared is... let me grab my phone calculator really quick.
Go for it.
Okay, 170 times 170 is a massive number. It's 28,900. So we average that.
Yes. Because of the properties of a squared sine wave, the mean, which is the average of those squared values across time, is exactly half of that peak squared.
Okay, so half of 28,900 is 14,450.
That's our mean. And the final step is the root. We take the square root of 14,450.
Punching that in the square root of 14,450 is roughly 120.2.
And there it is, 120 volts.
Wow.
Suddenly, this chaotic wave that is physically peaking at 170 volts perfectly matches the nominal 120 volt label printed on your phone charger.
That is wild. But hold on, I'm stuck on something here.
What's that?
If the whole problem with the average guess earlier was just that the negative numbers were canceling out the positive ones, why are we doing all this intense squaring and rooting?
Wow.
I mean, squaring a negative number makes it positive, sure, but why didn't they just make the negative numbers positive and take a normal average like that rectified meter did? Why is RMS the only valid way to measure it? It seems like they overcomplicated it.
It does seem that way at first, but to answer that, we have to look at the actual physics of power.
Okay.
Power isn't just about voltage. It's voltage pushing through resistance. This is derived from Ohm's law and Watt's law.
Right, going back to high school physics.
Exactly. The formula for power is voltage squared divided by the resistance. If you double the push, the voltage, you also double the current flowing through. So the resulting power effectively quadruples.
Oh, because the higher the voltage goes, the effect on the actual power is squared.
Precisely. When an AC wave spikes up to its peak, it's disproportionately dumping a massive amount of energy into the load during that brief moment.
Mm-hmm.
If you just flip the negatives and take a simple arithmetic average, you are treating all parts of the wave equally. You are completely ignoring the massive squared impact of those high peaks pushing through the resistance.
Okay, I see it now. So the average meter misses the big bursts of heat.
Exactly. The RMS process, squaring the values first, perfectly preserves that squared magnitude energy relationship. It weights the peaks properly.
Right.
Then, after you average those squared energy values, the final square root step brings the number back down to a standard voltage scale. RMS preserves the energy equivalence that average voltage completely discards.
And for pure sine waves, this creates an incredible mathematical shortcut, doesn't it?
It really does.
You don't have to do calculus every time. The math simplifies to a golden rule. just divide the peak voltage by the square root of 2.
Which is roughly 0.7071.
Right. Take the peak, multiply by 0.7071, and you have your RMS voltage. Boom.
Which is the entire payoff of this system. It unlocks the holy grail of electrical engineering, which is simple arithmetic.
Nice.
Because once you have that RMS number, you have established the heating effect equivalence.
The heating effect equivalence. This is the core so what of all this math, isn't it?
It is. It answers the fundamental question. What steady DC voltage would deliver the exact same amount of heat to a resistor as this wavy AC signal? Thanks to RMS, engineers can take a chaotic AC circuit and use the exact same simple DC formulas they learned in school. Power equals RMS voltage times RMS current.
To really detail the stakes here, the source gives a great dramatic example.
Yeah, the toaster one.
Right, let's say you have a 60-ohm resistive heater, like the glowing coils in your toaster. If you plug that into a 120-volt RMS supply, the math is incredibly easy.
Very easy.
You square the 120, which is 14,400, and divide by the 60 ohms of resistance. That gives you 240 watts of dissipated heat. Your toaster gets perfectly hot. Your bagel is golden brown.
This raises an important question, though. What if you didn't know about RMS?
Oh, boy.
What if an engineer naively used that actual physical peak of 170 volts to do their calculations for that toaster?
Let me run those numbers.
Mm-hmm.
If they used 170 instead of the 120 RMS equivalent, they'd score 170 to get 28,900, divide by 60, and they would predict 481 watts of power.
Which is exactly twice the true value.
So RMS basically exists so engineers don't have to do complex calculus every single time they want to build a toaster. But if they get it wrong and use the peak, they predict double the power. That error means they go out and buy wires that are way too thick, which wastes money.
Or worse.
Right. Or worse, they buy relays and breakers that are completely incorrectly sized for the actual heat being generated. The safety mechanisms would fail.
And that's the real danger. Instantaneous AC power is swinging wildly, but heat, the physical temperature of the wires in your walls, depends on the long-run average power.
Mm-hmm.
And RMS is the only value that accurately predicts that long-run average power. It turns complex sinusoidal analysis into straightforward algebra, keeping the grid safe and predictable.
Okay, so if this shortcut works for perfect sine waves, what on earth happens when we plug in all our chaotic modern devices? Because the world isn't just running on simple toasters anymore.
That is a great point. If we connect this to the bigger picture of modern infrastructure, the math gets very, very messy.
I can imagine.
Industrial settings and even modern homes are full of things like variable frequency drives, dimmers, LED ballasts, switching power supplies.
And these devices don't draw power in smooth, elegant waves.
No, they don't.
The source actually mentions they chop the wave up.
Yeah.
But why are they doing that?
Well, instead of drawing power continuously, a modern LED dimmer physically switches the electricity on and off thousands of times a second just to save energy.
Oh, wow.
It takes that smooth, rolling, 120-volt wave and literally slices pieces out of it.
It sounds chaotic.
It is. It leaves you with jagged, spiky pulses of power. These are non-sinusoidal waveforms, square waves, triangle waves, just erratic, distorted shapes.
And that square root of two shortcut we talked about, the magical 0.7071, that only applies to a perfect sine wave.
Exactly. Once the shape of the wave changes, the ratio between the peak and the RMS changes too.
Right.
For a perfect square wave, it's just a block. It's instantly at the peak, and it stays there until it instantly drops. So for a square wave, the RMS voltage actually equals the peak voltage. There is no fraction.
Oh, interesting.
And for a symmetrical triangle wave, the math works out. So the RMS is the peak divided by the square root of 3. Every single shape carries its own unique conversion factor, which is often called the crest factor.
Wait, so if a standard hardware store multimeter is basically guessing based on perfect sine waves, how on earth can a technician trust what they are reading?
Well, standard meters are what we call average responding.
Right.
They physically measure that flipped rectified average we talked about earlier, and then they apply a baked-in multiplier, assuming the signal is a perfect sine wave, to display an RMS estimate on the screen.
It's like a tailor who assumes everyone has the exact same body proportions as a department store mannequin.
I love that analogy.
If they only measure your height, they use a baked-in formula to guess your waist size.
Mm.
If you're built like the mannequin representing our perfect sine wave, the suit fits perfectly.
Right.
But if you have any other body type, like a chopped up distorted wave, the suit is going to be completely wrong because the tailor never actually measured your waist.
Exactly. And the source confirms the danger of this tailored assumption.
It does.
If you put an average responding meter on a distorted signal, it can return readings that are 40% too low or 10% too high.
That's a massive margin of error.
It is. If you are an industrial technician, trusting that flawed reading can lead to catastrophic miscalculations of power and current, you might think a wire is perfectly safe when it's actually overheating and melting.
So how do you actually measure the waste size? What's the solution for the technician out of the field?
You have to use a true RMS meter.
Okay.
Brands like Fluke make these. A true RMS meter doesn't guess based on assumptions. It literally performs the calculus in real time.
Wait, really? Inside the handheld meter?
Yes. It samples the waveform thousands of times a second, squares every single sample digitally, calculates the average of those squares, and then takes the square root. It applies the fundamental mathematical definition directly to whatever chaotic shape is in front of it. If the load is anything other than a clean sinusoid, you absolutely must reach for a true RMS meter to see the real energy impact.
So if a basic meter is just guessing, how do regulators guarantee that the actual electronics we buy won't melt our countertops? Let's talk about how this actually shows up in the physical products we rely on.
Good idea.
Because RMS is essentially the contractual language of the physical world.
It absolutely dictates the physical boundaries of safety. Let's look at household grids outside of North America.
Okay.
In Europe and most of Asia, the standard wall outlet is rated at 230 volts.
Which, as we now know, is the RMS value.
Right. But if we use our shortcut in reverse taking the 230-volt RMS and multiplying by the square root of 2, we find out that the actual physical peak of a European outlet is a terrifying 325 volts.
325 volts? That's a massive jump.
It is huge. The international standards mandate that the physical insulation on the wires, the clearances inside your light switches, the distances between components on a circuit board.
Yeah. All of that physical safety architecture must be sized to handle that 325-volt peak so the electricity doesn't arc across the air and cause a fire.
Wow.
But the utility company, they don't bill you on that terrifying peak. They bill you on the 230-volt RMS power you actually consume to run your household.
Right. So the peak dictates the safety limits, but the RMS dictates the actual work being done.
Exactly.
And this applies to everything. If I go buy an electric kettle and it says 1,500 watts at 230 volts, the engineers use that RMS voltage to figure out how thick the power cable needed to be so it could deliver that sustained energy without burning up.
Motor nameplates, transformer ratings, the trip curves in your breaker box, they all rely on steady state RMS calculations. It is the only metric that matters for sustained thermal output.
There's one more example from the text that I absolutely love.
Which one?
Think about this for a second, to you listening out there. Have you ever gone to an electronics store and seen a Bluetooth speaker or a car amplifier in a shiny box boasting 1,000 watts of peak power?
Oh, yeah. The audio engineering example is a classic case of misleading metrics.
It really is.
In audio, amplifier, and loudspeaker data sheets, quote, RMS power to indicate sustained continuous capacity.
Right.
That is how much real heat the delicate wire coil inside the speaker can dissipate over a 3-hour concert without burning up.
But marketers love the word peak because it's always a bigger number.
Always. The peak burst capacity is always much higher, but it's essentially a marketing trick. It only represents what the speaker can do for a fraction of a millisecond during a massive, sudden drum hit.
Yeah, if you try to push that peak wattage continuously,
the speaker will literally catch fire.
Wikes.
Confusing peak power with RMS power in professional audio is a very, very expensive mistake. That is why audio professionals treat the RMS specification as the ultimate undeniable contractual reference number for what the gear can actually survive.
So what does this all mean? When we look back at the wall outlet we started with, RMS is not just some arbitrary label slapped on a piece of plastic.
No, it's not.
It is the ultimate translator. It takes this violently oscillating, constantly varying, chaotic AC wave, and it distills it down into a single, highly meaningful power equivalent number.
Beautifully said.
It tames the chaos so that our circuits obey the simple, beautiful math of power equals voltage times current.
And without that translation, the modern world just couldn't function.
Yeah.
Without RMS, sizing a circuit breaker for your house or picking the right cable for a high voltage power line would require engineers to track voltage moment by moment in real time.
Just doing complex calculus for every single appliance on the grid simultaneously.
Exactly. RMS makes the complex simple and actionable.
It finds the true effective impact of something that is constantly fluctuating, by mathematically smoothing over the extreme fleeting peaks and completely ignoring the fact that it occasionally drops to zero.
Right.
And it leaves me with this thought for you. How might we apply this concept of RMS, this effective equivalence, to other chaotic areas of our lives?
That's an interesting way to look at it.
What if we stopped measuring human productivity, or our emotional energy, or even our daily habits, by our manic high-energy peaks, or by our crash-and-burn lows?
Mm-hmm.
What if, instead, we focused on our own personal root-mean square, our true, sustainable, long-term output, the energy we can deliver continuously without burning out our own wiring?
I love that.
Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. The next time you look at the power label in the back of your TV or plug in a toaster, I hope you see it with fresh eyes, knowing the hidden math that keeps the lights on.
Uh-huh.
Until next time.